Hi, everyone. This is Coach Fab for Casinos USA. And we're coming to you today from Western Pennsylvania, November 8th, 2018. And it's a tough one. Dice control. Yes, no, maybe. So hang on to your hats. We're ready to begin episode number 52. It doesn't take long, if anyone is investigating dice control and craps, to learn that there are companies out there charging over $1,500 for a two-day seminar, hands-on, throwing, releasing, etc., teaching you how to control the dice. Hey, and don't be afraid. If you don't get it right, you can always come back and take the refresher course for another $1,200 or $1,300. Yet before I call this a fraud, I'm going to try to take a look at this picture with an open mind. Will you join me in that? Let's take a look at it with an open mind. How about that? Hey, so in investing your money this way, are you really being taught an authentic skill, or is all a hoax? And it seems so often when you just try to discuss this topic, regardless of the side the person's on, if you disagree with her, if you disagree with him, this is the response that you get.
You disgust me.
Or maybe it's closer to this.
I hate you all so much!
And of course, once the dice control crowd is angry, it's a big scam crowd comes back with this.
You can't handle the truth!
So Casinos USA is throwing caution to the winds, and we're going to offer our opinion, you know, based on our research. And this is a question that's been around a long time, but it seems it's only recently the cost of training for such thing as dice control has really began to skyrocket. You know, you can always tell if someone's setting the dice when the dice are passed to them on a craps table because they set the dice in a particular manner. And that is by using one hand, they turn one die to one number and then the other die to the same number or a different number. Even they might look at not just the top number, but the back number, the front numbers, or the inside number of the die, each one. And so if that takes a lot of time to do, it might be that the casino says, hey, speed it up. And a lot of times people will say, well, they're trying to stop dice control because they know that you'll win. I would have to disagree with that. I think when a casino is asking you to speed it up, it's not about the fact that you're setting dice. It's just that you're setting the dice so slowly that you hold up the game. Now, personally, I don't like to go the other way. I don't like what I call NASCAR craps, where people just grab the dice and throw them, bang. So I don't mind a few seconds. But I'm just going to say this. If you want to get involved with dice control in terms of setting the dice in a special way, you have to practice that. And you can do that just by having dice. You don't need a craps table. You know, the top of the die and the bottom of the die always equals 7. And so that will help you in your search for the numbers, whether they be in the back, the front, the top, or inside the die. But that's important. So I guess if you believe that dice control, not just the setting of dice, but the position of your arm, the grip that you put on the dice, where you're throwing the dice to, you know, the rhythm of the throw in relation to the others that you've thrown. If you believe that's all authentic, I guess for you the first question would be, can I teach myself to do it? Do I need to spend money? And I would suggest that in this day of YouTube videos, you probably can find enough information on there that you can feel rather secure. There's actually software that can measure what you do. And, you know, again, you start thinking, wow, like, what does it take? What does it take to prove that you can control dice? And controlling dice, does it mean one or two things or both of these? Is it the number of rolls that you can throw without throwing a 7? Or is it the fact that you can hit a particular number, you know? And I think people look at it both ways. And in counter to that would be that the longest craps recorded, that's the other part, recorded by the casino. The longest throw happened in Atlantic City, and it did not involve dice setting. Grandmother Patricia DeMario, on May 23rd, 2009, at the Borgata Hotel. She was the shooter for 4 hours and 18 minutes, 154 rolls, 25 pass line wins, and the estimated table win was about $180,000. So there wasn't a lot of people at the table, and there wasn't a lot of big bettors there neither. But Patricia claims that this was only their second time throwing craps. And so I guess a question we'd have to ask, why hasn't somebody who paid for all this great instruction broken the record? And since this woman made 154 throws, what does it mean to prove that you have dice control? I mean, she wasn't setting the dice and she threw it 154 times, you know, randomly. Pretty hard to prove dice control. Yeah, that might be a flimsy way to think about it, but it's true nonetheless. So immediately I must say that I do set dice. I'm not paying any money to learn how to do it. I think I know how to do it just fine. And I can maybe authentically or imaginarily break down the throw, the launch, into components, you know, what side of the stick man am I standing on, you know, am I next to the stick man, am I down from the stick man, you know, do I put my off arm on the rail, do I lean against the rail with my off side of my body, do I swing my arm, how much velocity do I use? Do I backspin the dice when I throw them? Do I stack the dice when I throw them? Are they side by side? It goes on and on and on. You could create all these different components, you know, with the idea that somehow you're going to control that. And I did a little test on my own craps table, just putting a little round sticker, one of those Mr. Yuck stickers that we put on things for our younger grandkids on the table. And I just wanted to see, you know, I asked one of the older grandkids to stand there, and I threw the dice 40 times, and I just said, just count the times I hit that sticker, because it was right before the wall, and, you know, you're taught generally and to backspin them right before the wall, boom, and they should just come right back without flipping left or right. They stay on their axis, and so only a number that was up on the back, the front, or the bottom will come up. That's the idea. In many of these instructions, not all of them, but I couldn't hit that sticker 40 times out of 40. So what does it matter? What kind of grip I used, the velocity of my launch, etc., if I couldn't throw it exactly to the same place, you know, 40 out of 40. And even more upsetting to me, because I said dice, is that sometimes when I missed a sticker by a mile, a good hard way number came up. Yeah. So how many throws do you have to record to demonstrate that you're getting some advantage over the house edge of the game? 100, 1,000, 5,000, 50,000? And that's always going to be the issue, you know? And people who believe in dice control believe that if you threw a 7, you 7'd out after the point was established, it was because you didn't do something right. You know, one of those components was wrong. The landing spot was wrong. You know, it goes on and on. But on the other hand, it may be irrelevant, all those things, because the table, the design of the table, you know, when it hits the back wall, which to make it a legal throw has to be, sometimes a casino lets it go. They won't let it go for long if they think you're doing it on purpose. But they say that creates the random nature of the throw, regardless of how much you keep the spinning in tight. I do feel, you know, on the other hand, you know, the contrarian in me is I do feel more confident when I see someone set dice and take their time with the throw, much more so than when someone just flings them. Boom! But I've seen people flinging dice that make 3 or 4 points and throw a lot of numbers before they 7 out. So, oh, come on. You know, that's all I can say. So I am saying, as the founder of Casinos USA and the people that work with me here and gamble with me here, more importantly, is that I think dice setting creates tendencies. Tendencies that truthfully no one that I know on the internet or not can control dice. But I think a rhythm roller setting dice to a particular set that I use myself, you know, the Flying V3 or 6-1 inside, 2-3s on top, pointing in the same direction, and all pairs around the dice. 6 on top with 1-6 being inverted, the rail side 6 going toward the dealer, and the other one on the inside of the set is going to the wall. A 5-4 set with 2 5s on the top, 2 4s in the back. You know, those are things that I do a lot, and I don't know, maybe it adds to my enjoyment, but I just get some comfort in when somebody throws the dice and sets the dice carefully rather than just picks them up. A little comedy relief sometimes is a person who sets the dice, and you know the dealer's getting upset because they seem like they're taking a lot of time, but then they pick the dice up, you know, in the one hand, and by their ear they shake the dice up. Like, you got to ask yourself, why'd you set them? Now you just shook them up and you don't even know what they said. And they kind of just throw them. And every once in a while they do okay. But if they 7 out, just like I do sometimes when I set the dice, you say to yourself, doggone it, they just set the dice the right way. You know? So that's why I called this episode Yes. I think there are many people who do believe there is such a thing as dice control. But that I think that most of them would acknowledge it's such a hard thing to do. And it's very unusual for anyone to control the dice for more than 2 throws in a row. You know, we can argue about that. I don't want to go through those name things again. So I would say yes. Some of you say yes, and I understand that. I say no to dice control. I say yes to dice tendencies. All right? So I don't even say maybe to dice control, but I'm not going to argue about it. If somebody sets up this one of these seminars where people could film it, make it a public event, and someone breaks Patricia DiMario's record and sets the dice and it's all on film and documented, I might change my standing on dice control right now. But for me, I'm only speaking for myself. I do know about setting dice, and I have my favorite sets, and I'm not going to waste your time breaking the components of the launch into this, and then you got to do it perfectly. Well, of course, you know, you can't do it perfectly every time because there's 8 or 9 components, so come on, all right? That's just a way to say it. That's why you didn't do it. That's why you didn't get the number. That's why you rolled too many 7s because you're not doing it perfectly. You know, just seems like it's self-defeating. With a sort of an intention to monetize this experience for the person giving the directions. But it does make our game more or less enjoyable to me. And if you go on our website, casinosusa.bet, I have photographs of casino dice with information about my favorite sets. I do not have information for you on the throw, the launch, the grip, all that. Get that from the internet. Get that from your own experience. All right? Dice control. Yes. No. Maybe. I rest my case. Thank you. We'll be right back for part 2. Our Facebook group, Casinos USA, I get messages on Messenger from that Facebook group. Really wanting to know more about who we are. And our website is www.casinosusa.bet. There's several pages, I think 7-8 pages on there with information, pictures, photographs of where we've been. But we're basically a podcast site for the recreational gambler. You know, a group of us, you can call them a team if you'd like. You know, we refer to ourselves as the team. We travel from casinos and we have gone coast to coast. And basically what we want to do is share the fun we're having with our listeners. Casinos USA podcasts, of course, are free, as many other podcasts. And so is our Facebook information. But we don't ask for money. We don't ask for donations. There are no charges or costs ever to our audience. We produce 2 podcasts monthly. And many of those podcasts open up with ads. Sometimes they close with ads, from AutoZone, McDonald's, Bank of America, certain colleges. And in that way, we can cover the expense of publishing. You know, when you do have a podcast, whether it's for your business or just for a hobby, there are expenses involved because you have to have a website. For example, we pay GoDaddy. You might want to protect your site if you're selling anything from it, etc. And those are other expenses, security. If you use PayPal, there's an expense. So anyway, the podcasts are written and the author is yours truly. I'm the voice of the podcast. And I did have a successful book on crabs called Crabs Across America. And I get kidded about that a lot. Like people say, I should have said playing crabs across America. All right, we don't have to necessarily investigate that. Janie and I, my wife, we love our audience and we welcome your feedback and suggestions. And feel free to make non-political comments in our Facebook group. And that's underlined non-political comments. Or to call the show's voicemail, and you can do that by calling our answering service 24/7, of course, 1-724-519-4556. That's 1-724-519-4556. In doing so, give us a comment, a trip report, ask a gaming question, share something, but use only your first name, maybe tell the state you're calling from. That's all it is. And we give you 5 minutes, and there's a good chance we'll use that in the show. We'll give you our answer on the show, even if we don't use your call. So during the month of October 2018, which is now closed, we had our biggest month. We've averaged 680 plays of our podcast daily, and that's over 21,000 plays during the month. We're so pleased with that. So thank you for your support by being loyal listeners. Very much appreciated. All right. Sincerely, thank you, thank you, thank you. All right, we'll be right back with part three after our famed island of music. Here it comes, everyone. Hey, in full disclosure, I got this idea from one of our Facebook group members suggesting that we should do things that have a regular segment, maybe not every episode, I'm thinking, but Las Vegas for grown-ups, because, we have talked many times, like, we don't go to Las Vegas to drink into oblivion, and as a married couple who's been in love since ninth grade, we don't go there for, any kind of sexual escapades. And I think most people who listen to podcasts about Las Vegas are in the same boat, and it's about gaming and recreation and a lot of other things associated with travel that you can enjoy that, we discuss here. But today we're going to talk about, in our Las Vegas for grown-ups segment, important things to do before departure day. There are a lot of important things to do before departure day when you're staying away 8 nights and 9 days from your home, and you're a couple thousand miles away from home. So I thought this might be helpful to some. And not that everything that we're going to talk about would apply to you, but I'm sure many of these will. So we can help each other with making sure you take care of business on the home front before we go gallivanting around the country. And I invited Janie in to discuss these with you. All right, here she is.
Hi, everyone. This is Jane.
I just wanted to start with something that's very important to us, and that's our little dog, Oliver. And, we think 9 or 10 nights away from home, that's just too much to ask relatives to deal with. And we're sending him to, just for a better name, a pet hotel. But one of the things, if you have a pet at home and you're thinking about taking your pet to a kennel, is to understand that probably your state, just like our state, Pennsylvania, requires that kennel boarding dogs have certain shots. And actually, Oliver's shots came to an end in November, and they had to be, a second round had to be put in. And so we got that done. And then I took the paperwork to the boarding kennel, so it's all ready to go. So we're going to drop him off a day before we leave. because we're leaving at 3:30 or 3 a.m. in the morning out of our house to drive to the Pittsburgh airport. So if you're thinking about a pet hotel, first of all, make reservations in advance, because most of them can be very crowded, particularly around holidays, and we're going Thanksgiving week, so Oliver, it was important to get that reservation made. And then he had to get the shots that were required, Bortella, Lyme shots, those kinds of things. And the paperwork has to be up to date, or the kennel under state law can't take them. Okay, Janie, the next item that comes to mind.
Well, I think you should think about your actual airline trip or however you're going, but we need to review the airline tickets for the exact departure time and confirm the number. We need to print the boarding passes before we leave home. Just make sure we have everything set up for the flight. And, of course, at our house, we always like to turn off the water to the washer, because hoses can break any time. The insurance companies tell you that all the time. And one of my mother's neighbors, and she was looking after their house a few years ago, and don't you know, she was over there and she heard water, and here their hoses broke. And so, and they weren't even all that old. So you have to check those. But that's just a word of advice. That's what we do.
So, you know, your pet, get that registered and check your airline supply, you know, at departure times for your when you're going to leave the house. Also, the hoses to the washer, that's a good one, Jane. In Pennsylvania, I think most states have some sort of inspection for cars. And we're leaving at the end of November, and actually the inspection stickers on all three of our cars come up in November. So we had to get them to a center to get them recertified, inspection stickers. Because when we come back, it'll be the end of November, and we could be fine. And I'll tell you what, the Pennsylvania State Police aren't going to give you a break. Another thing about the car at the airport, you know, we're leaving, again, before Thanksgiving. However, when we get back, there may have been a couple days of snow, serious snow. So another thing that's easy to forget if you're in this tween time between fall and winter is making sure your car has a snow removal brush. And you know what, Jane? We do have a nice app for our Lincoln. What's that? Want to explain that?
Well, that's the remote start. Yeah. You know, we can start it while we're in the airport, you know, before we get out there. And actually, when we went out last February, when we came home, there had been a snowstorm that morning. And we came home. Fortunately, we got there just about the right time. There was a lot of snow at the airport, but we knew where we parked, and it was really close to where the terminal runway walkway ends. So we didn't have too much of a problem there, but the car did have to be cleaned off, or you'd have to let it sit for so long before, you know, all the snow melted. But so you should also make sure, because, you know, a lot of times when you're going to Hawaii or the Caribbean, or we're going to Las Vegas, or you're going to Florida, you're not thinking of winter gloves and such, but you should have that stuff in the car for when you come home, because you may need it. Make sure your car is full of gas. I know we're leaving around 3 a.m. to go to the airport when we leave, so and not everything is open. A lot of things are, but it's just easier if you take care of all that first.
One of the other things I would recommend is to call the hotel where you're staying. For example, I made these reservations, M Life and Total Rewards, Caesars Entertainment, Total Rewards, through their reservation center, because I was using points, you know, and I was getting comped rooms. So I couldn't do that from the hotel desk. But now what I'm going to do is I need to call that hotel desk a day or two before we depart from Pittsburgh to make sure they got the information correctly, you know, because oftentimes in the past, I've discovered that the hotel did not get the same information from the reservation center that I was promised. Like, for example, in our case, we wanted a room on the strip side of the hotel. We wanted a room with a refrigerator, coffee service, and we wanted a room that is close to an elevator. So I'll review that with the front desk, and we're going to be also early check-in, make sure that's all, you know, up to snuff.
Okay, another thing you want to do is make your essential packing list for items that you have to take. You know, I think people our age, and a lot of people, though, Make sure you have your medicines. You know, make sure, you know, if you're flying, you got to make sure you have the proof of your medications. I like to take them. I know it's, you know, a little bit of cumbersome, but take the bottles with, you know, with the prescriptions right on them. Take a little bit bag of that. Just make sure, and also that if you have anything that has to be refrigerated, that you take care of that, or have some kind of container that will allow you to have that be chilled all day, like if you take an injectable, something like that.
That's an excellent point, and I wanted to remind our listeners that if you tell the hotel, most Vegas hotels, that you have a medical need for a refrigerator, they may not charge you. I know many of them, that's their policy. You just have to verify the medical need when you check in, and they'll take that off of your bill.
Okay, this trip, we're really kind of committed to recording and tracking our daily food costs, because if there's anything that comes up when people go on a trip like this, they'll say, wow, it's so expensive, you know, eating three meals a day and a snack or whatever. So, and again, we have family there too, so we go out with them also. So we're going to try and take tell you how we're going to do, how we do it after we've done it. We usually take several Starbucks cards with us because we like our Starbucks, and almost every hotel we stay in has at least one or two Starbucks there. I also like their little breakfasts and some of their lunches that you can get there. And I might say my grandchildren all have favorite drinks at Starbucks too, so it's very easy to spend quite a bit there. So I like to get gift cards when I can and then just take them all with us. We like to plan the meals together, and then we also review the coupons that we have left in our Las Vegas Advisor book and the American Casino Guide. This is where you get percentage off for restaurants. You get BOGOs, you know, the buy one, get ones at different buffets, different restaurants. Or you'll get, let's say, you'll get 20% off your total tab at some of the restaurants. So we like to go over that. We don't go out of our way to do a lot of that, but we try to figure out where we're going to be, what's closest to that. And there are places, as we said in the last podcast, where we definitely want to eat and like to go to eat. So we figure them into it, too. We also, my daughter, I've talked to her, and she wanted to know what we wanted to do. Did we want to go to a night's hockey game? Did we want to see certain shows? So I told her she could surprise us. We'd like to do any of that. As I said, we both have said before, we like to partake in a lot of the activities that are going on there.
Well, I do have a couple must-dos. I'm definitely planning on gambling, playing craps at the Flamingo, and that's going to be a low rollers kind of thing there. But I also want to do some high rolling in craps, and you know where I'm going to go for that.
Probably the Bellagio.
Yeah, hey, you guessed correctly. The Bellagio. And that's an M Life property now, so that will help us. I'm excited about that. That's going to be a $25 minimum table, but you know, I'm going to just do that one time over our stay, and I'm really looking forward to it. Do you have any Las Vegas show at all in mind?
We've seen quite a few, so no, I don't have too many. I know we always look and see, you know, who's there, what musical entertainment's there when we're going to be there, and then kind of make arrangements for that. But no, I haven't really concentrated much on that.
Well, I hope our daughter Jill then gives you a real surprise. Hey, the other thing that's a must do, the Fighting Irish, and I don't know if they'll still be unbeaten, but in the final regular season game of the year, they're at USC, and of course, that's our arch rival. So that's one of them. That's the biggest one for me. Beating Southern Cal makes a successful season to me. And so I'm definitely going to place a bet on that game. I don't know what the odds are at this point, but I don't care. I'm betting for the Irish to win, even if it's a pretty big boost. So the point I'm trying to make is we're going to watch that in a sports book. I don't know which one yet.
Oh, also while we're there, we're going to place bets for Notre Dame women's basketball, because last year I wanted to do that. I should have done that. I just knew they were going to be national champs, and even though they did have that loss to Louisville in the beginning, and they did turn out to be, and we could have placed the bet. That happened to us with the Steelers one year when they won the Super Bowl after they'd lost five games in a row, but I will definitely do that.
Well, you can do that, and we can probably play some games while we're out there, but I think you forgot. You can play some after December 1st.
Oh,
where can you place them?
I can place them at the rivers.
Yeah, right here.
Oh, okay. I hadn't even thought of that because I'm so used to not being able to do it here. But in the event that it doesn't open up in December and allow me to do that, I still may place one out there. It's pretty easy. You know, you place the bed out there, you save your stub, and then we put it on the fridge or somewhere, and then after they've played the game and everything's over, then you send the stub back and they send you the money. It has not been hard for us to do that, but we also are looking forward to do the sports betting here now, or locally in the other states too that we go to. Oh, there's just something else I wanted to bring up when we were talking about must-sees. I don't know if anybody caught Halloween Night television, but on the Travel Channel, we watched, there's a new attraction in Las Vegas called the Haunted Museum. It's only been open for, I think, a little less than a year, but they had, it's from the Ghostbuster crew that does the paranormal ghost sightings and whatever on the Travel Channel. They were there, and it looked really enticing to go and see it. Along with this time, we're definitely going to the Mob Museum. We haven't been there, but my daughter hasn't been there either and wants to go. And she did tell me that you can actually even have parties there, and that sounded kind of interesting. Back to the Haunted Museum. It's in the area between the Strip and Fremont Street. It's in between there. So you're not on Fremont Street and you're not on the Strip. So it's sitting in that area. It has a pretty big property there. And it looks like a very large facility. This Zach is the owner. He bought a haunted house from Gary, Indiana, tore it down and rebuilt a lot of it in part of this museum. So, as I said, it was a 4-hour show, got my attention. Now, whether I'll go to see this place or not, I'm not sure, but that's another on the list anyway. Finally, I just wanted to mention that I had some dinner with one of my out-of-town friends who came in to celebrate her mother's 100th birthday here. She's in a nursing home facility here, and my friend lives in New York, and she comes back every month or so, but she came back and we had dinner with another friend who walked into the restaurant with this big smile on her face, and I said, "Oh, look, you look happy." And she said, "Well, I just came from the Rivers, which is the casino in Pittsburgh." And she said, "I won $1,000. So we were all excited about that then. And hopefully she's going to call our answering service and talk about that. And let me give you that number again. It's 1-724-519-4556. You can give us a trip report. You can ask a gambling or traveling question. Tell us about whatever you've done in any casino. Because we're not going to be on again till December after this podcast.
That's right, Janie, and thank you for your input today. Our podcast, Casinos USA, will return on December 6th, and of course, we'll be talking about our stay in Las Vegas. Life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, that's what we do here at Casinos USA, a place where every day is Saturday. Happy Thanksgiving. We'll see you in early December.